Lindsey Buckingham is my guest today. He has a new solo album called Under the Skin. He and Stevie Nicks joined Fleetwood Mac in the 70s after releasing a duo album on their own, and their input rejuvenated Fleetwood Mac and led them to their greatest success. He has been in and out of the band, reuniting for the Say You Will album, which was a success. All along, there has been experimental, inventive solo albums. I began by asking him if it was freeing for him to work alone, as he did on the new disc, compared to balancing all the egos and ideas in the group Fleetwood Mac situation.
Well, it was. I mean, as you may or may not know, much of the material that I had been intending to get out as a solo album over the last 10 years or so ended up on Say You Will, the last Fleetwood Mac studio album. And so when that found a home, suddenly I found myself in a frame of mind to really want to do something different. I had gotten married and had kids in that interim, and I wanted to make something that felt intimate. And I think also, you know, I had had experiences on the road with some songs that had transformed themselves from ensemble pieces to single guitar pieces. And those seemed to be very effective with audiences. So it just got me thinking about how to make an album that is basically presented that simply. And I think, you know, as you say, it doesn't, the reason it doesn't sound like other acoustic albums is because it's, there are production techniques applied liberally. And I think that's the point of departure.
Absolutely. Lindsey Buckingham is our guest. Well, why don't you do the first track from the album if you could, because it's a really good one, and kind of people might understand why I say that word visionary when they hear this.
Right. Well, this was actually a song that came about because I saw a piece by Bud Scapa in Rolling Stone, who somehow, you know, had reason to want to refer to me as an underappreciated visionary, and it got me thinking about motives for what you do for long periods of time and how it lines up with, you know, the present, especially when you have children. So this is called Not Too Late.
Reading the paper, I saw a review. It said I was a visionary, but nobody knew. Now that's been a problem, feeling unseen, just like I'm living somebody's dream. What am I doing anyway? Telling myself it's not too late. I'm not a young man, child in my soul. I feel there's room for a man who is whole, and there's a need for songs that are sung, for chances not taken, for deeds not yet done. What am I doing anyway? Telling myself it's not too late. To say, my children look away. They don't know what to say. So that's been a problem. Feeling unheard. So-called visions always deferred. It must be the reason I developed this need. You know you should never believe what you read. What am I doing anyway? Telling myself it's not too late. What am I doing? Telling myself it's not too late. My children look away. They don't know what to say. Look away.
Not Too Late is the song that begins Under the Skin, Lindsey Buckingham's new solo album. And yeah, you're right. There are almost too many questions and things that come up in that song. You got a lot in there.
Yeah.
I like to center in about the part about having kids. And my response to having kids was immediate. Everything I'd done before in my life seemed like prologue, and that it was kind of starting now. And I'm wondering what your vision was when that happened.
Well, I think to some degree that there's almost a biological imperative that would be the case, and I certainly experienced that same thing. I think the irony, you know, it comes when you have chosen to conduct your life in a way that's very focused on very few things. You know, I had a lot of my friends in the earlier days who were parents and were not really present, were not really there for their kids, and the kids suffered. And I swore I would never do that. I wanted to honor the upbringing that my parents gave to me. And so, you know, by the time it seemed possible, it didn't seem particularly probable. And yet, you know, I did meet a beautiful woman, my wife Kristen, and we've had three children. And so all of that, you know, which is all about the present, you know, lining up with the product of maybe 20, 25 years of work, you know, this album, which is also in the present but is as much about the past. I mean, there is an irony there, and you have to ask yourself about the motives that maybe led you to this point. And and of course, you know, there's the part at the end of the song where I'm talking about my children looking away. They don't know what to say. And, you know, my two older children have seen Dad on stage with Fleetwood Mac in front of a whole bunch of people. I think my son called it showing off. So, you know, he understands that he has a healthy skepticism of the pretense of all of that. So, you know, all of it, there is a great deal of irony to all of that.
You brought up something when you were kind of introducing it that it's been true for the longest time in your career, which is this pull between your solo work and Fleetwood Mac. In the very often you've been working on a solo album that, whoops, no, now it's a Fleetwood Mac album, or whoops, the songs are now taken and gone that way. Do you feel out from under that a little bit now, or?
Well, sure. You know, as I said, the songs that ended up on the last Fleetwood Mac album, Say You Will, had been intended for a number of years and, you know, through a series of stops and starts to be a solo album. But, you know, once they found a home and I realized that they were actually probably meant to be on a Fleetwood Mac album because they had Mick and John all over them.
Right.
And subsequently Stevie, you know, there that was a point of departure for thinking about something new and something that was sort of cyclical, coming back around to things that maybe I hadn't, you know, gotten to in quite a while.
Lindsey Buckingham is our guest, and you were talking about doing one that I goes back, I think, to Tango, which was the album you made before you kind of left.
Yes.
Right. And what were the circumstances of recording this the first time? Did you get what you wanted?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, that album was a bit chaotic. I think probably the main reason that I produced the album and went through the process and then left before the tour was because it was extremely chaotic. I think that point kind of represented the apex of everybody's, you know, personal lives hitting the wall in every way. And, you know, the road is usually times five or whatever of that. So it was a kind of a survival move for me. But sure, that song, Big Love, was the first single from that album. And at the time, it was just to get through it, you know, was the triumph. And you know, to be able to come back to the song and restate it, not consciously, it was just something that happened. You know, it sort of has been the springboard for what I'm doing now, in a way, the psychology of that.
Cool. So we can give a version of that?
Yes. Big Love.
Looking out for love in the night so still. Oh, I'll build you a kingdom in that house on the hill. Looking out for love, big, big love. You said that you love me, that you always will. Oh, you begged me to keep you in that house on the hill. Looking out for love, big, big love.
the big acoustic guitar version of Big Love. Lindsey Buckingham is here today. That sounds fabulous. In reading up on your life, one of the things I read about was when you were a kid, you not only noticed pop music on the radio, but you claim you noticed, like, you were interested in production as a kid. I mean, you knew what that was. You figured out what a record sounds like.
Well, not in those words. I just when I, after I became skilled at knowing how to listen, how to take things apart, to understand what makes something sound the way it does. I remembered, that even before rock and roll came into the household, that when I was drawn to my parents' 78s, I would be listening to Nutcracker Suite or South Pacific or Patti Page, for God's sake. And asking my mother, how do they make that sound? I mean, what is the concept behind that? And my mom not always being able to tell me. But, yeah, there was a train of thought towards trying to take things apart even back then. And then, of course, when my older brother brought home Heartbreak Hotel, as I'm sure is a fairly common story, I was... just that was, just a revolutionary thing for me. And I started spending hours in my brother's room listening to his 45s.
Coming up, Lindsey Buckingham talks about two of the most revered Fleetwood Mac albums ever, Rumors and Tusk, when we return to the World Cafe. Lindsey Buckingham on the World Cafe. One of the things I also noted about your life has been there's been a series of coincidences. A thing happened that were just fortuitous along the way. You met Stevie. You ended up going to L.A. You got some kind of an inheritance from somebody you didn't even know that well that allowed you to do production work. Mm-hmm. And that led to being in the studio it's a series of coincidences.
That's right. Yeah. It really is. You're right.
That's do you ever wonder, if I'd taken a turn this way, if I'd not gone that, but you were always drawn to production. I mean, you're always drawn to music. I mean, obviously it was always there. It's just as a matter of...
Yeah. All of that seemed like a very natural series of things. I met Stevie when she transferred to my high school when I was a junior and she was a senior, and then she graduated and I finally got in a band, and somehow we hooked up the following summer. And all of that seemed, like it was kind of a natural progression. The only thing that I've ever thought about now in terms of what might have happened had we made a different choice was, after we did that one album, Stevie and myself, we were in the studio and we were in the back studio at a place called Sound City, and we were working on some new material, and I walked into Studio A, and I saw this big, tall guy listening to one of our songs, Frozen Love. And he was rocking out to the guitar solo, and, of course, that was Mick Fleetwood. And a week later, he asked me to join the band. I said, you got to take both of us. But it was not a clear idea, They had many incarnations since the Peter Green days, since the Denny Kirwan days. And we had had a strange kind of phenomenon that had begun to happen, even though our album hadn't sold and was not on the charts. We were somehow able to play for 4,000 or 5,000 people headlining in places in the South. And, you know, it was a sort of a calculated move, weighing the pros and cons. But, you know, what might have happened if we hadn't done that? You know, it's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, it sounds like he made the good choice. So there you go. Lindsey Buckingham is our guest today. We're listening to tracks from the new album, Under the Skin, and talking about old and new Lindsey Buckingham songs. You want to do another older one? Or
sure.
Or one next?
Yeah. You know, it was interesting the big challenge being in Fleetwood Mac in the early days was, of course, as everyone knows, Stevie and I were a couple, and John and Christine McVie were a couple, and somehow the four of us ended up, you know, being four people instead of two couples, and you know, we're still having to fulfill what appeared to be the destiny that had been laid out for us. And that was a hard thing for me, you know, as a producer, to be able to go in every day and during the process of the making of Rumors and to, you know, craft songs for Stevie, basically make hits for Stevie that were allowing her to move even farther away. It was a tough emotional challenge, and I think we all got through that to some degree on you know, maybe not the best means, probably to some degree a certain amount of denial, a certain amount of compartmentalizing of feelings. And, you know, you come up with songs where you have the illusion, you know, people, there's that old adage that says when you're happy, you think you'll never be unhappy again. And I think this song was basically about a point where I had kind of gotten a little bit down the line with closure with that, and I thought maybe, you know, there would never be another emotional strain in my life.
Oh, so you're going to do Never Going Back.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So, Never Going Back Again. She broke down and let me in. And made me see where I've been. I've been down one time. Yeah.
Live acoustic version of Never Going Back Again. Lindsey Buckingham is with us today on the World Cafe. You know, it's kind of a, it's almost a cliche question, but you talk about all the angst and everything that was going on in the making of that album. Everybody has heard about it over the years. Do you wonder, would it have been better without it, or did it fuel it? You know, the creativity.
Oh, no, I absolutely was inseparable from it, you know. I don't think we understood it at the time. I don't even think that we were that in touch that we were writing such clear-cut dialogues back and forth to each other. I think they appeared at the time to be way more generic than they really were. Mm-hmm. And it was really the audience who you know, made us aware of how true they really were and how specific they were. You know, it's one of those things. You do your work and you try to get through it. Sometimes you can't be objective about it until you get other people involved, get the audience involved. And in this case, you know, the album, the effect of the album, the success of it, certainly, was not strictly about the music. It was about people buying into our lives, you know, and possibly, if you want to look at it, our heroics, if you want to see it that way. It brought out a bit of the voyeur in everyone, and I can't see that as it was inseparable from the music, and that was part of what made it a phenomenon at that time, I guess.
And yet, now when you hear it, it's the songs, it's the the last, and you know, there's something about it's. They're great songs, great songs. I have to ask. I have to ask one more little Fleetwood Mac era question, and that's about Tusk, which was seen as the time as because it didn't sell 20 million copies, and in fact, only at the time sold 2 million, as seen by some people as a failure. Yet over the years, Tusk has come to represent one of the high points of the band, and certainly has pointed towards you as well, your work on that. As mm-hmm. as if people are going to call you a visionary, that's part of where that comes from.
Yeah.
It's people's idea about that album. How did you feel at the time, and how has your feelings about the album changed?
Well, you know, that was an interesting process to go through the kind of mega success that we experienced on Rumors is not something too many people get to be on the inside of. And certainly it was a great experience. And yet, it as with anything else, it had its limitations. It certainly gave us the artistic freedom. It gave us some financial freedom. It gave us visibility.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think there is a kind of a tendency to follow that adage, if it works, run it into the ground. And I think that there was pressure from the record company, and probably to some degree there would have been a tendency from within the band as well to try to make Rumors 2. But the band was still way behind it, and so was I. It was only when, as you say, it did not sell 16 million copies or whatever it was, that there was a kind of a backlash from within the band. And that was something like, well, Lindsey, we still want you to produce, but you can't do this anymore. You can't this anymore. And so that left me sort of dead in the water in terms of knowing what to do. You know, I mean, you can't consciously go back and be something you're not. And that was sort of the beginning of the end for me. It was certainly the beginning of making solo albums, which I probably never would have made if we'd somehow been allowed to include that more left side of the palette.
Right.
And so, you know, at the time, it was kind of heartbreaking for me. But as you say, in retrospect, now I have Mick Fleetwood and Stevie both saying, gee, that's our favorite album now.
Lindsey Buckingham is our guest. So what is it's funny because when I first read it, I assumed it was Down on Rodeo, but it isn't. It's Down on Rodeo. What is that about? Is it about Rodeo? It's just pronounced differently?
Well, I think it's – yeah. I call it Rodeo only because It's singable.
Right, right.
Although when I think about it, you know, yes, initially the meaning of this was, you know, you think of all the people that go down to Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills and window shop. And I was somehow there was an analogy between that and, you know, people in their lives who may go through half their life window shopping from one thing to the next and never really going in and never doing what needs to be done in order to purchase, you know, emotionally or otherwise to make something profound happen. So there was that. And but I guess rodeo, you know, when you think about cowboys and that whole element of society, which is what the cowboys represented to America at one time, which is pretty much a ghost now. You know, I think there's an element of that too, possibly.
Cool. This is from the new one.
Yes, Down on Rodeo.
Down on Rodeo, a live version of that, which is another one from Under the Skin, as Lindsey Buckingham is our guest today on the cafe. And thank you so much for
My pleasure. In. Thanks a lot for having me.
And thanks again to Lindsey Buckingham for joining us. The new album, solo album, is called Under the Skin. And if you're looking for it, our World Cafe CD store has it at worldcafe.npr.org.